Hey friends, welcome back to the Journal Feed. My name is Nick Zelt, and this is the only place to get spoon-fed the latest and greatest of emergency medicine. We've got recent articles appraised and concisely summarized for your benefit. If you are hearing this right now, then you are not part of the members feed, and so you're not getting the full Journal Feed podcast, only receiving a portion of the past week's articles. Don't worry, all good articles. But if you would like to get full access to both the podcast and the blog, then you'll have to become a member. All the details for that are at journalfeed.org. Remember, we don't ever want money to be a barrier to better patient care, so if you're having any trouble affording a subscription, just get in touch. We'll help you out. This is the audio version of the past week's summaries, which this week were brought to you by our authors Rebecca White, Seth Walsh Blackmore, Jason Lesnick, Doug Wallace, Amanda Matthews, and Clay Smith. All right, let's skip straight to the second article. Titled Effectiveness of Fludrocortisone plus Hydrocortisone versus Hydrocortisone Alone in Septic Shock, a Systematic Review and Network Meta-Analysis of Randomized Controlled Trials, out of the American Journal of Respirology and Critical Care Medicine. Steroids for septic shock have become increasingly favored. Even the Surviving Sepsis Guidelines from 2021 was more or less in favor of them for persistent hypotension. Typically, we like to give hydrocortisone, because it's got some mineral corticoid properties. But we can do better. We can do more mineral corticoid by adding fludrocortisone. Is hydrocortisone enough, though, or should we add that extra punch? Of course, we would have a meta-analysis to answer this question, because this is not a new question. But unfortunately, trials don't actually compare the two options head-to-head, hydrocortisone alone or hydrocortisone plus fludrocortisone. So we're left with a Bayesian network analysis to, indirectly compare interventions. This lets us estimate the probability that future research would find a benefit to one intervention or the other. It doesn't quite replace a real trial, but it helps us focus our research resources on questions that we might actually answer. Anyways, the trials that the authors found were on steroids versus controls in patients over 16 years old with septic shock. They found 17 RCTs for almost 8,000 patients to analyze. Only one trial of 509 patients actually compared the two interventions directly. And guess what? More steroids was more better. Fludrocortisone plus hydrocortisone found a 15% relative risk reduction compared with placebo. Hydrocortisone on its own did not have a significant benefit compared to placebo. Comparing the two interventions against each other, unsurprisingly, favors the two-steroid regime, though not significantly. That said, the probability of superiority for the combination therapy was 94%, with equal safety outcomes. The authors did a pretty good job here, but nothing quite replaces real trials. Finding a mortality benefit for a condition like this, it's kind of a big deal. It's not easy to find significant differences in mortality that are so easy to act upon. Also, these are relatively cheap drugs. If you want to start implementing this in your practice, then you can steal the dosing regime from the Approaches trial. You can give hydrocortisone at 50 milligrams IV Q6 hours and fludrocortisone given via NG tube at 50 micrograms daily. In a spoonful, this Bayesian network meta-analysis of RCTs indirectly compares hydrocortisone plus fludrocortisone to hydrocortisone alone or placebo in septic shock and finds superiority for the combination regime. And then we skip to the fifth article, titled Clinician Risk Tolerance and Rates of Admission from the Emergency Department, out of the JAMA Network Open. Now this is interesting. I'd really like to see the next steps on this research. Are you the cowboy in your department? Every department has at least one. And if you don't think yours does, then guess what? You're probably the cowboy. You see, these cowboys, they're sending people home that you wouldn't have the risk tolerance to do. But how much of a difference is this really making? Does this actually significantly change admission rates? The first step in this research was to try to see who self-identified as a cowboy through a survey sent out to all practicing emergency physicians in the state of Massachusetts. The survey was made up of four scales: the risk tolerance scale, the stress from uncertainty scale, the fear of malpractice scale, and the need for cognitive closure scale. Next, the authors used state all-payer claims databases to find emergency department visits with any sort of commercial insurance or Medicaid. They then linked those visits with survey responders who had seen at least 30 patients over the study period. Altogether, that came to nearly 400,000 visits across almost 700 physicians. Admissions for observation and transfers to higher levels of care were counted as admissions. The overall admission rates actually ranged a fair amount, from 36% at the 25th percentile to 48% at the 75th percentile. So there's quite a range there. They calculated projected rates of admission for common conditions, namely nonspecific chest pain, urinary tract infections, respiratory signs and symptoms, pneumonias, and syncope. They then compared the projected admission rates across actual admission rates, but there were no significant correlations there. So for those conditions, it meant that physicians were just as likely to overadmit as they were to underadmit. Essentially, they were pretty good projections. However, if you self-identified as having a greater risk tolerance on the survey, i.e. being a cowboy, then these doctors had significantly lower admission rates compared to the projections. I don't see how this data can be really useful to you clinically in your practice, but it is interesting to know that people that think they're cowboys might actually have lower admission rates than the people that know they're conservative. What would be interesting to see, much more interesting, would be to see patient outcomes according to physicians' risk tolerance. If admissions are different than our bounce backs, our adverse events, should more of us be cowboys or should less of us? That's what I want to know. In a spoonful, in this retrospective study of ED physicians in one state, researchers found statistically significant differences in admission rates among clinicians, but little consistency in admission rates across multiple conditions. Clinicians with greater tolerance of risk, what we call cowboys, had associated lower rates of admission when compared to projections. All right, that's all we have from this week. Let's do a quick wrap-up, see what we learned. From the second article, if you're going to give hydrocortisone for septic shock, consider adding fludrocortisone to it. It's probably even better. And then from the fifth article, physicians who think they're cowboys might actually act like them. They appear to admit less patients than self-identified conservative doctors. Now, again, if you are hearing this right now, then you are not a part of the members feed, so you missed three articles from this past week. What do those articles talk about? Well, you missed a really great review on PE management. We talk about the digital age and why we need to incorporate it into our lives, our works. And then finally, who actually ends up in those beds in the hallways? We answered that question too. Links to the original article summarized can be found at journalfeed.org. Just have a look in our show notes. Our goal here is for you to read less, learn more, and save lives, one spoonful at a time. Thank you.